You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. Bowtech Archery prides themselves on offering a bow for everyone. Whether you have a short draw length, a long draw length, pull 70 pounds or 40 pounds, you're a bow hunter or a target archer, they offer a bow that can be customized to fit your body type. On top of that, their deadlock technology allows you to fine-tune your arrow flight. Visit bowtecharchery.com and check out the SR350 and the CP28. Bowtech Archery, refuse to follow. What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome, or I should say lady, because there's probably, I think my demographic for this podcast is like 97% men, and so 3% women, which if I had to guess, that is about one or two women actually listen to this podcast. I tell you what, if you are a lady, why don't you hit me up on the Nine Finger Chronicles Instagram page, send me a DM and just say, I listen to the Hunting Gear Podcast and I'm a lady. So there's that. Anyway, lady and gentlemen, hopefully you guys are having a great day. We have a really good kind of a BS session. I felt like here's the straight up truth. I recorded 2.5 hours of podcasts yesterday. One of them was a Hunting Gear Podcast. I had some technical issues. The podcast did not even record. And so here I am. Here I am just kind of throwing together another one so I could have some content out for today. But it ended up being a really good conversation. Here's some of the products we talk about today. We talk about, we do some filming equipment. We talk a little bit about, self-filming cameras. I can't believe this. Anyway, we talk about e-bikes. We talk about e-bikes. We talk about products that today's guest, Josh Raley, is able to use in the South where he hunts out of Georgia and in Wisconsin. So we talk about overlapping products. A lot of it has to do with e-bikes and things like that. And so it's a really, really, really good conversation. Oh, yeah. Tacticam. That's what we talk about. We talk about products like Tacticams, e-bikes, crossover products from the north to the south, and it's just a really good BS session about hunting gear and equipment. So before we get into today's podcast, though, I do need to talk about, we do talk about saddles. We talk about tethered. So if you're looking for a really high-quality product with some really good educational information behind it, great customer service behind the brand, go check out Tethered. They have everything you need for saddle hunting. So if you're looking at getting into saddle hunting, go check out Tethered. We have Hunt Stand. Hunt Stand is the app for Eastern whitetail hunters, right? And it's going to become the app for everybody. So here's what I'm going to say. If you don't have Hunt Stand, go check it out because you can download it for free. You can play around with it for a little bit. Then you can upgrade to their pay-to-play package or their elite package, which is like $30 a year, right? That's like $100 less than some of the other products, like their competition out there. And they have more functionality than their customers. So with that said, right, we have just so much information. You can go learn how to use their product, huntstand.com. Go check it out. And then also Tacticam. Tacticam is a partner of the Hunting Gear Podcast. So if you're looking for to film your hunts, right, to document some of your shots, go check out the Hunt Stand website. These guys have the new 6.0 version available. And so there's more image stabilization. There's more, they have an LCD screen now on there. So you can really set up your shot, take a look at it, play it back, that kind of stuff. And so in this episode, we actually talk about the original like the GoPros and the Tacticams and what they were then compared to what they are now. And it's night and day difference. So go check out Tacticam and their line of products. So that's today's that's what today's episode is about. Those are the commercials. We have a really good guest in Josh Raley today. Hopefully you guys enjoy. Please go to iTunes, leave a 5-star review on the Hunting Gear podcast, the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, the Sportsman's Empire Network. I really, really would appreciate that. Also, make sure you're following the Nine Finger Chronicles on Instagram. Make sure you follow Josh on the Wisconsin Sportsman and the How to Hunt Deer podcast. Other than that, let's enjoy this episode today, guys. 3, 2, 1. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Hunting Gear podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today we are joined by the host of the Wisconsin Sportsman and the host of the How to Hunt Deer podcast, Mr. Josh Raley. Josh, what's up, man?
Hey, what's going on, buddy? How you doing?
I don't know. I feel. I'll be straight up honest. I texted you this morning. I'm like, hey, dude, you got 30 minutes for me. All I need is 30 minutes of your time. I recorded some podcasts yesterday, and I had some technical issues. So 2.5 hours of recordings just disappeared. Didn't show up on my SD card, and so I'm very appreciative that you have 30 minutes for me to hop on and BS about gear today.
Absolutely, man. I'll be your backup anytime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but here's the deal. You're getting ready at some point today to hop into a car and head to one of your farms.
Yes, sir. I'm actually packing right now. When you text me, I was at the hardware store buying a bolt for my camera arm because for some reason I can't seem to find the bolt that holds the fluid head to the actual arm. So I'm in the process of putting my gear in the car right now.
Yeah. So you're planning on self-filming then? Self-filming?
Yeah. Yeah. So I started self-filming about 2 years ago. And, you know, I've been doing it a lot with the turkey hunting and had a lot of success. I have yet to get a deer kill on film just because, man, the deer walks out and I'm like, screw the camera.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to pass a deer for the sake of getting it on film. I'm just not there yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, it's fun. I enjoy it.
Yeah. I self-film for tons of years. Like I want to say maybe 10 years and did a lot of self-filming. And there came a time when I just realized, and this is my point of view. I'm not trying to scare you off or anything, but when you have a 170-inch 10 pointer, you let walk through a perfectly good shooting lane at 13 yards just so you can try to get it to the next camera or the next shooting lane. And then eventually at this point, he's hard quartering away. The shot happened. I was focusing on my camera and not focusing on the shot. Bad hit. He eventually survived and was shot on a neighboring farm the following year. But since that time, I think it was like somewhere around 2014 or 15, I just said, I'm done. I'm just kill mode now. And the best part about that is the amount of gear that I don't have to bring into the stand with me anymore.
Yeah, I will say, man, when you start messing with this, so like I was counting it up earlier, I'll be taking 4 cameras into the tree with me this year.
Dang.
And yeah, and you know, you're trying to get multiple angles and you're, when you're by yourself, you've got to get everything, right? You've got to get the B-roll, you've got to get shots of yourself, you've got to get shots of the animal. And so the more cameras you can bring, the easier your job can be when you're in the woods.
Yeah.
The only problem with that is it's just more gear to carry. But 2 of the cameras are Tacticams, so they kind of just roll in with me you know, without any real thought or concern. But yeah, man, I'm at that point where – so last year, for instance, October 16th, 135-inch 9-point comes charging in to this area where I was running away from some pheasant hunters. And I knew it was quick. I knew I was going to have to make a quick shot. And I just forgot all about the camera.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not even going to worry about it. But what was cool, the camera was still facing the other direction. There was a bigger buck that the camera could see that I could not.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Now that buck never would have come my way either way.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm not at the point yet where I'm going to, I'm going to miss a shot because of the camera.
Right. But you will take the time to haul it in and set it up and hope for the best.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And if I get something on camera that I can share with people, great. If not, hey, man, you know, it sure was fun to film squirrels for a while.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. And all the B-roll that you want and all the interviews. I remember when I was doing a lot of filming for a company called White Knuckle Productions, and we put out deer DVD, you know, deer hunting DVDs and a web show back in the day. And I would sit there, and it would just be hours and hours of me talking to the camera compared to the very just minutes of, you know, time that the deer were actually on the screen. And so it's just hours of interviews. And so you get to the point where you're really good at, okay, the wind, here's the wind, here's the access, here's what we're doing. And then it's over. And then deer comes through, you film it. Okay. Got to talk about it. Okay. That deer did exactly what I thought it was going to do, blah, blah, blah. You know? So I don't know. But I tell you what, the more that I get into, you know, the Sportsman's Empire and running it and video is king for the most part when it comes to this type of content. So there's always this little part of me that's like, dude, you just do it again. Just get into it again. And so we'll see what happens, man. I'm never going to say never.
Yeah. And man, the gear on that front has come so far. Like right now I'm using a little fourth arrow camera arm. Mm-hmm. And dude, that thing compared to some of the newer like micro light camera arm stuff, it's like a tank. Yeah. And so I need to upgrade that this year.
Yeah.
Before my application for sure.
Is that carbon fiber?
The pocket arm I think is carbon fiber. The one that I have is the old aluminum.
Okay. I gotcha.
Arm with like a big metal base. I mean, it's super heavy. I think that with my camera and everything is like 12 pounds or something.
I gotcha. All right. This is what I wanted to ask you. Tacticams, right? These action cams, a GoPro and things like that. I'll be honest. They sent me one. It's sitting in this room and I just don't attach it because I don't use I've never really used a stabilizer on my bow. And so I've really never done it. And since I'm out of this self-filming mode, I'd hate to have it on my camera and then just never use it or never hit the button to record. You know what I mean? So, talk to me, cause I think they came out with a new version recently, like a 6.0 or something like that.
Yep.
And honestly, I just remembered this. They're actually a partner of the Hunting Gear podcast. So, I mean, why not talk about it? I mean, I remember when Tacticam first came out and they were just like everything else, just kind of, I mean, if you were to compare their first model to the new model, night and day difference. And I never really got motivated to use it. What's your experience with them?
Yeah, man. So right now I'm using the 5.0 and the 5.0 wide, and yeah. I'm not a big stabilizer fan either on my bow, but those cameras are so short and so light that you really don't even notice it when it's there.
Like, gotcha.
I have no idea that it's even there.
Gotcha.
I like you though, you know, when I first started looking into Tacticam again, when the 5.0s came out, kind of had their old stuff in mind and thought, you know, yeah, that's really cool. You got video of the deer coming in, but as soon as that bow went off, you know, the screen went blank basically because it was the image stabilization just wasn't there.
Yeah.
With these newer models, it's getting better and better every year. And the 6.0, they've taken it up another notch. So they just get a little bit better with that image stabilization year after year.
Yeah.
And the 5.0 and 5.0 wide, man, they've both got 4K footage, which is fantastic coming out of a little, you know, a little camera like that. And it's got like 8X zoom. So I've loved them so far. I've had really good results. Had a lot on the turkey woods.
Yeah. Yeah. I got a gun mount for mine too. So, it's just a matter of using it for me. I just got to hook it up and use it and check it out because I think it would be fun to show my kids the video from it, you know, from shooting the deer. But here's the deal. You know, you get it, you get the shot on camera, and then you drop your bow, and then it just films the ground while you go and watch it die. Right. So you would have to like pick your bow up and kind of guess where it's at to, I don't know, get the rest of the story on camera. But I guess that's why you have three other cameras in the tree with you.
Yeah, man. I learned that last year the hard way. So people feel all kinds of different ways about reaping turkeys, but I decided to try it and it worked out. But man, Tacticam footage from a reaped turkey is like 45 minutes of grass and dirt.
Yeah.
And then 30 seconds of there's the turkey, shoot it.
Yeah.
So, so you just gotta be mindful, you know, after the shot, especially to keep your gun up or keep your bow up and just make sure you get it if you want to capture it on there.
Right. Right. Okay. So the other question I have for you is, correct me if I'm wrong. Do you have an e-bike?
So I was trying an e-bike out for a local company.
Okay.
I do not personally own an e-bike yet, but I have used one extensively over the last couple of weeks.
Okay. What are your thoughts on e-bikes?
Dude.
Yeah. That's I know. I just tell
game
me.
Changer.
Yeah.
God. I hate to say the words.
Man.
Like it was incredible. So I live down the road now from a piece of public that's about 30,000 acres.
Okay.
And this piece of public, they keep all the roads except for one locked year round.
Mm-hmm.
So there are roads back behind these gates that are 3.5-4 miles long.
Yeah.
That you simply cannot have the time to walk. I mean, you get on the WMA at the earliest time that you're allowed to get there and you start walking. Well, it's sunup by the time you're even getting close to where you want to be.
Yeah.
But with this e-bike, man, I was able to cover some serious ground and be really efficient with scouting and putting out trail cameras.
Yeah. All right. So here's what I always like. I base it off treadmill time, right? So I can walk at a comfortable pace. I think it takes me 20 minutes to walk 1 mile, right? Now, if you add terrain up and down on that, then it's more, but you're taking 20, 40, 1 hour. It'd probably be more to walk 3 miles. Okay.
Oh yeah.
You know, yep. You know what I mean? So what are the rules and regulations on that piece of public for e-bikes?
So that piece of public is really, really friendly to e-bikes. They do not even count e-bikes as a motorized vehicle.
Right.
So you are free to roam. Yeah. Now, just across the state line, they don't want you there. Pretty much the entire state of Wisconsin doesn't want you there unless it's a designated bike path. And I think even then, they don't want e-bikes on the bike paths. So it really just depends on your specific state. But, you know, right now I'm right down the road from a piece that is really friendly to it.
Yeah.
At least for now, we'll see. People may get out there and do something stupid and ruin it for the rest of us. But.
Right. Right. So I myself have been doing a lot of e-bike research. Okay. And so according to like there is federal law, there is state law, there is individual property law, like BLM or state or national forest or state, let's say like state parks or things like that. And so this is where it sucks. There's no one right answer to look for, because, for example, the state of Nebraska says that, cause I was just on a hunt in Nebraska and I don't have an e-bike, so I didn't use one. State of Nebraska says an e-bike is a bicycle. Okay. But the National Forest says that like puts restrictions on it and it has a set of classes like class 1, 2, and 3. And so the National Forest says that, a bicycle is, or an e-bike has to be under a certain amount of wattage. It can't have a throttle. It has to be pedal assist only. And it has to be limited, not only with the amount of wattage that it produces, but the speed that it goes. So it can't have the ability to go over, I think it's like 20 miles an hour. Right. So here's a guy guessing, you know, like if I didn't dig multiple layers into certain things, right, it would say, if I looked at the first spot, I said, hey, Nebraska, it's legal there. All right. But I get there and a different jurisdiction on some federal ground comes up and goes, hey, you have a throttle on that. You can't have a throttle. Here's a ticket. They could potentially write you for a motorized vehicle. So it's very important to look into all that. With all of that said, though, I'm gonna change the conversation over to my public or to my private pieces that I have access to deer hunt on. Dude, if I had an e-bike, I feel like my truck. Let me put it to you this way. When it comes to walking through a property and you want to talk about access and being invasive, right? I feel like walking through a property is the most invasive form of access. Then you, you drive a truck and the deer may be used to it, but it's still loud. It's still, you know, headlights. It's still a vehicle and they'll probably avoid it. Now with an e-bike, it's smaller. It's probably just as quick to get back in there as opposed to like a truck. And then you can just lay it down and there's no visual of a truck, right? So you can quickly get in. And so I would say that the least invasive form would be an e-bike in some way, shape, or form. And dude, I want one so bad just for that reason, just to get in there quick, to get into a spot, drop, you know, I have no truck there. I just leave the bike laying down. So there, it's low profile and get in there. And I've never used one, but I honestly believe that I could get in there and really like not affect the deer herd coming to a food source in the evenings or going back to bed in the morning. So.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
I don't know.
Oh, for sure. I rode past this piece of public that I was on. It gets pretty hammered. We're mm-hmm. close to a big city, mm-hmm. and I rode past several deer that paid me zero attention.
They just kind of look at you, and then they put their head back down.
Yep, that's exactly right. I drove past a bedded doe and fawn, 10 yards off the road. They didn't care.
Yeah.
And I talked to a couple of guys in this whole process of exploring e-bikes who were like, man, I not only ride my e-bike into the woods, I ride it all the way to my tree and lay it down.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go that far, but I've heard people say they do it.
Yeah. And I feel like when it comes to, I just mentioned that being invasive, like what's the most invasive, man, if it's a consistent noise, like for example, I tell this story all the time. I was in a tree stand and it was an afternoon hunt. And I just was picking apart this marsh with my binoculars. And I just noticed these antlers sticking up out of this marsh. And I'm like, holy shit, that's a really good buck. Here comes a combine on the opposite side of the marsh and starts combining this cornfield. And wouldn't you know it, that deer didn't even move. And it was, I'm guessing somewhere between 50 to 70 yards away was the combine and this buck. He just sat there and chilled and let this combine go by. And so I feel that if you can just have this consistent, like it's not a shocking noise, it gradually gets louder, gradually gets louder, gradually gets louder. And then it's loud. And then it just gradually goes away. It goes away and goes away. And then they're not freaked out by that. So if you can go all the way to your tree stand, that'd be nice, man. I really do think that would be, if you had a way to hide it, right? Put a blanket over it or like a ghillie suit or something, or put some sticks over top of it and make it not like, I don't know, threatening in any way. Dude, I honestly do think that would like, but then the whole question is that fair chase? right? So some people think that's not fair. That's not fair chase. But dude, people have been driving right to their tree stands for years.
Oh yeah, for sure. I hunted in a club for a long time, and there was a guy who was infamous for parking his four wheeler between the legs of the shooting houses underneath.
Right.
All the way, drive right up in underneath it and climb up. And when he was done, he drove out. So man, his name was Charlie Buck. We'd always say, "Hey, should we go down to this field today?" Nah, Charlie Buck was down there.
That's funny. All right. So yeah. And then, you know, you've already mentioned the other reason why. So when I go on my next hunt, there's a couple other states this year that I kind of want to hit, and both of them on this certain certain properties are e-bike friendly, and you can just get so much further back quicker. And I mean, the one spot that I'm looking at from the closest road, right, is to get back there, unless you have access on private property, the closest way to get back there is it's a 6 mile round trip, or seven, actually. It's 3.5 to get to the glassing point that I want to get to, and then 3.5 back. And so, man, it just like walking that in the morning and then having to walk that back. I've done a pack out at 3.5 miles of a mule deer between two guys, right? And I think combined with all of the gear that we had and the meat, we each had 100 pounds. And this was like a 350 to 400 pound mule deer buck. I'm a huge bodied deer. And it sucked. I mean, it sucked. And that wasn't even an elk in the mountains, right? That was just prairie ground, you know, rolling hills, and nothing too crazy steep, but still at the end of that 3.5 mile walk with 100 pounds, I wanted to die. And so even if you take half the trip and you go back, you're still, all you're doing is riding a bike. Right. And so I just feel like it would be such a game changer, and I have bad knees and a bad back, so I can use the "I'm getting old" excuse now.
Yeah, man. And you know, the one that I was using actually had a trailer as well. And I think had a 350-pound limit. So you kill a deer, you throw your deer on there and haul it out.
Yeah, man. Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be amazing? And the other thing I'm thinking about is on some of the private ground that I hunt, I can walk down there. When I want to hunt, let's say a field edge or something like that. But if I do shoot a deer, I can't get a truck back there because their crops are still in the field, especially in October and even into November at some point. With something like that, you could really sneak in between the rows or right on the field edge, load them up and get them out of there and not have to drag them 30, you know, like 400 yards, 500 yards, whatever it is, or get someone else to help you. You know, you could have a deer cart. That might make it easier, but still, I don't know. I really do think an e-bike. Now, here's the question for you. What is the true difference? And I'm shooting myself in the foot here. What is the true difference between an ATV or a side-by-side or even a dirt bike and an e-bike?
Yeah. So I think they're, you know, from different people's perspectives. So I think these states that are permitting e-bikes, but not permitting some of these motorized vehicles, you can really tear stuff up with a four-wheeler, with a side-by-side, or with a dirt bike.
Yeah.
An e-bike just does not have the torque or the weight to really tear things up, which I think is huge.
Yeah.
And then you've got the noise factor, you know, and that's just you as a hunter. I mean, wanting to be as stealthy as possible. And it's, you don't have the smell. It's fully electric. You don't have the smell of the exhaust and all of that crap. Yeah. All you got to worry about is recharging it when you get home, and then you're good to go.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Definitely something that's high on my list. And I can remember even doing podcast episodes on the Nine Finger Chronicles, back in the 2017 or something, I vividly remember having conversations about how I, I hated e-bikes. And like, you know, who can possibly afford an e-bike, and who could, you know, talking all this trash on them. And here I am now. It's funny how, you know, you become a hypocrite of yourself, you know.
Oh yeah.
Identify your, now I'm a hypocrite, because I can definitely see the benefit from them. As I, you know, I'm 5, 6 years older than when I was making these original comments. And now I'm just like, dude, these might have a place for me and for my wife and things like that. So, especially for the older generation who, you know, if you're in your 60s or even in your 70s and you're like, Jesus, that's a long, you know, 500 yards could be a long walk. And
yep.
I don't know. So,
which one are you getting?
Yeah, I don't. Right. Right. I've been looking and I actually have a friend that work. I have a friend that works for one. Okay. And he can get me a 50% discount on an e-bike. So with that said, and now I don't want people like reaching out and going, hey, Dan, hook me up. But he can get me that because he has some pull in the company. And but even then, the one that he recommends for what I'm trying to do, even with the 50% discount, is going to be like $2,500 to $3,000, right? And so, because, you know, there's certain e-bikes out there that are at 500, you know, 500 watts and pedal assist and things like that, it'd be legal for I can make it legal for public ground, but it's not going to have the power, I guess, for some of this. What e-bike did you use, and what was what were the settings on it?
Yeah, man. So this is a new company called Leise Motors, LEISE.
Okay.
It was a 1500 watt with dual batteries.
Okay.
And, dude, that thing was a beast.
Yeah. Yeah. So that 1500 watt automatically takes that out of what I'm trying to do.
Yep.
Because the wattage is too big for the public ground that I want to access.
Yeah. So with this, there are different settings.
Okay.
And I think you're trying to work with, you know, what states are allowing, and saying, okay, when I put it on this, it doesn't go above 1,000.
Yeah.
Or when I put it on this, it doesn't go above 750.
Yeah.
I don't know if it would fly in certain states, but, you know, I know that they're trying their best to keep it, you know, legal for as many places as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So we've talked about technology in this episode. We talked about some filming, some Tacticam. We've talked about e-bikes. It sounds to me like both of us are on board with the e-bike game, and we both want one really bad. Now I want to talk a little bit about maybe something else, maybe some products that, because this is funny. Josh is the host of the Wisconsin Sportsman podcast because he used to live in Wisconsin, but now you have since moved to Georgia. You're still doing the podcast, the Wisconsin podcast. And
yeah,
so, and you're going to be hunting both states, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. I'm loading up to drive to Wisconsin this afternoon.
Right. So with that said, it's completely different scenarios, right? As far as, let's just say, weather, temperature, even hunting strategy. You've hunted both these places before, correct?
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Let's talk a little bit about products, maybe some products that have overlapping, that overlap, right? So I can use them this product in Georgia. I can also use this product in Wisconsin.
Yeah, man. Number one is my saddle.
Yeah.
I know you're dabbling in the saddle game this year.
Yep.
And man, that is the number one thing. You know, down here in the Piney Woods in Georgia, that saddle can get me way back in there. Even when it's hot, I can get into any tree that I want to. And, you know, it just does really well, especially for longer walks or for hotter temperatures.
Right.
When I'm up in Wisconsin, you know, I'm hunting a lot of marsh ground, a lot of really brushy, scrubby stuff, not necessarily a lot of great trees to climb where I'm trying to get in on some of these bucks. And so, you know, that's huge for me there because I can get into a tree that's, you know, as big around as a softball if I have to.
Right. Right. Okay. Yeah. That's great. man, I tell you what, this saddle thing, full disclosure, right? Tethered is a partner of the Nine Finger Chronicles and the Hunting Gear Podcast, right? I get paid to promote their products. Here is my only concern, being just completely honest with the listeners. I have bad knees, I have bad back, and I have yet to spend, I've shot out of them. I can see the they're fairly comfortable. I even have the old man, I call it the old man. I think it's like additional back support that you can throw under your armpits and sit there. Here's my concern is that, let's say I get in there, I set up, it's a morning hunt, and 10 o'clock rolls around, I'm starting to get on maybe a little uncomfortable, and now the deer start to come through and on like this mid-morning movement, and I'm uncomfortable already, and I just like, I can't leave because the deer are here, and so now I'm focusing on my back hurting or my knees hurting. And so I've had guys express this issue, and then I've had other guys, you know, like Parker McDonald of the Southern Ground Podcast, he loves it, other guys love it, and they say, oh dude, there's no issues if you set it up right, there should be no issues. So I have the biggest saddle that Tethered makes, the biggest platform that they make, and so my goal is I can just kind of adjust everything to get to where I you know, to where everything's comfortable. And so I don't know, we will see on how it plays out, but that's my only issue so far. Like shooting out of it, there's only one type of angle that I might be really concerned about, and that's the draw arm backside where they're coming behind you on a,
yep,
you know, on your draw side. And so that would be a concern, but I've practiced that shot, and you know, I've learned how to do it. I don't want it. I'm not going to set up for that. I'm going to set up for something else. But you know what I mean? But like just the hours in there, your experience, yeah. Have you sat in a saddle for 4 or 5 hours before?
It's only a kick, a jump, a block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle, a run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Dude, I've sat in a saddle dark to dark.
And
it's great. Okay, I love it.
So you don't get uncomfortable.
Now, okay, let me give some caveats. Parker and those other guys are correct that if you've got the saddle set up right for you, you should not have many issues. That is 100% true.
Right.
It takes some figuring out, though, to find out what is right for you.
Right.
And just like in a tree stand, you're going to have some discomfort and you're going to have to shift and adjust.
Yeah.
I've sat in tons of different kinds of tree stands over the years, and I've not found one that I didn't have to adjust, you know, sitting all day or sitting for 4 hours straight. Like, right. I mean, there's some movement there.
Right.
So get your saddle dialed in. And I'll say this. So up until last year, I was hunting out of a Tethered Mantis saddle, which is horribly uncomfortable compared to the new Phantom and some of their newer saddles.
Right.
So I think your setup, you're going to be good to go, but I haven't had any issues. And again, it's just playing with it in the backyard. And, yeah, you know, I'll tell you too, on that offside shot that you're kind of concerned about, you know, I practiced that a little bit last year, but going into the season, and I shot my buck at that exact angle, and I didn't even think about making that shot until after it was over. I just
did it,
and I did what I had to do, and it was done. And I was like, oh, that was an offside shot. Great.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say this though. Okay. So, my tree stand choice has been, you can call them Novex. I call them Lone Wolves, right? It's the same, for the most part, the same design, same company or whatever. Even long hours in that tree stand, just like not moving, period. It doesn't matter what you're in. I mean, unless it's a recliner, right? Or, you know, so one of these days I'm going to say, I want a Millennium, you know, those big those big Millenniums that just have a basically recliner in them that has like back support. You can stick your feet out and just like really chill and relax in there. I'm going to be old enough someday to use those once my mobile game starts to slow down. I don't know if it ever will, but what I'm getting at is it would be really nice to have those. The point is that after even in the Alpha, so that they have the Assault and then the Alpha, I don't know what Novex calls them now, but the smaller one is my go-to, stand. And so sitting in that, even like for 6 hours at a time or 4 hours at a time can be pretty harsh on the lower back and things like that. But it's all about the functionality of it that I really use. And so, I guess it's give and take, right? So
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. And with a saddle, I feel like with a saddle, I've got a lot more options as far as where to sort of relieve pressure and how to relieve pressure in different places.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I would even say, hey, Dan, if you're going out for a sit in one of your, you know you're going to be in your Lone Wolf or you're in your Novik stand while you're out there.
Yeah.
Take the saddle along as your harness.
There you go. That's a great idea.
Turn around now and then, relieve some pressure off your back and, you know, put some into your hips a little bit more and, you know, whatever you need to do to keep yourself in the stand and keep yourself comfortable. Right. It's an extra pound at the end of the day, right?
Yep. Yep. That's a fact. Hey, that's a good idea. And I think I'm going to do that. And so if anything, just to get conditioned for a saddle, right? And that, so that when the time comes and it's like, okay, I need to be ultra mobile. I'm leaving the stand in the truck. It's just the saddle tonight. And I don't know, see what happens. See what happens.
Sure.
Anything else, any crossover, products that are going to be great in both those different scenarios?
Yeah. So I picked up some new, man, I've always been a cheapo when it comes to camo that I buy.
Yeah.
I've never got good camo gear. And this year I got some good early season gear, which is going to be good for like this weekend in Wisconsin, but also here in Georgia for pretty much the entire season. Just some lightweight, more technical gear.
What gear is that? What'd you get?
That's Huntworth.
Huntworth.
And
okay.
So they make some lightweight pants and then this like midweight hoodie. And man, I have a hard time. I mean, until the rut in Wisconsin, when it's, you know, in the mid 20s in the mornings, I think I'm going to be good to go pretty much the whole year down here.
Yeah. Dude, I tell you what, I've talked to the guys from Missouri Woods and Water podcast, and they are really impressed with Huntworth as well. So, dude, it's a company that I've seen on the hangers at stores, but I've never really messed around with because I have like, I don't know, I have a ton of gear already, right? And it's not like I need any more. So I have enough, but I always like to dabble and check everything out. And that's definitely a brand that I'm going to be looking into in the future. So,
yeah, man, I would say check them out. They'll be honest, you know, you call them on the phone, they'll be like, hey, look, we're not, you know, super technical as some of the other garments out there, like a Sitka or something like that. But we also don't make you trade in your children to get a piece of our gear.
Exactly.
So.
Well, and that's the thing, right? Like, I can see where a really high expensive, you know, like I'm a believer that for the most part, price reflects quality, right?
Yep.
So a very high, a very highly technical piece of garment, merino wool, something that has a windstopper in it, whatever. Out west, I can definitely see that. But for the average guy, going into a tree stand for 4 hours at a time, I don't necessarily know if you need all that stuff. Does it work? Trust me, I have the high-end stuff. I keep coming back to the Dickies and my like a merino wool base layer. Really, that's it. And so I keep coming back to that, and I don't know why, and I think a lot of it has to do with durability, right? For me anyway, I walk through some nasty thorns. I walk through that beggar's lice shit. I mean, you know that stuff that sticks to you, right?
Oh, dude, it's the worst.
It's the worst. And so I have, like work. It's they're basically work pants, like guys who pour concrete all day, but they're brown colored, or construction workers or whatever have these. And so that's what I use, because it doesn't seem to, that stuff doesn't seem to penetrate or stick to those garments. Anything fleece is just trashed by the end of that.
Oh yeah.
So, yeah, I can definitely see the functionality for it, but I like for my whitetail hunts, when I'm just walking through razor blades all day to get to some of these spots, or I don't know, I'm hanging on a tree and you know, you put your legs up around it and things like that, the durability just isn't there for some of that stuff. And so I like a different option. And so I can definitely see where a company similar to Huntworth would really be awesome. And it sounds like they're gaining traction, man. And from a company standpoint, I didn't know about them a handful of years ago, but now I definitely do.
Yeah, man. They started off, I guess their history is in gloves.
Yeah.
And that was kind of their bread and butter. And then they expanded, and man, I've talked to a lot of people, and everyone that I've talked to has been real impressed with their gear.
Yeah. Same here. And as it starts, you know, any company, what typically happens is, you know, they'll gain traction, and then their garments just keep getting better from there, right? And it depends on the ownership and how they want to make their money, right? They have two options. They can say, we want to make as much money as possible, which is a good business model, but then we're going to raise the prices on our garments, or the technology going into a garment increases, but the price necessarily doesn't, right? And so hopefully that's what happens. And that's what really allows people to get good, I don't know, good hunting gear. So I don't know. It all depends on the ownership and things like that. So it is what it is. But other than that, I think I told you I was going to try to keep this at 30 minutes. We've gone 40. So, dude, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to be flexible here and hop on this podcast before your trip. Thanks for the insight, and good luck on your upcoming hunt, man.
Absolutely, buddy. Good luck to you as well.